Hello everyone, this is Scott Woodard, co-host of the G2V Podcast. For this very special satellite episode of the G2V Podcast, I thought I might read a short story that was published in the Doctor Who Short Trips The Ghosts of Christmas collection, released in 2007 from Big Finish Productions. This collection was originally edited by Kevin Scott and Mark Wright. Unfortunately, Big Finish no longer produces these terrific collections, and they're kind of going for a pretty penny online. But here, as an audio gift to you, a reading of my short story, All Snug in Their Beds, An Adventure of the Fourth Doctor with Romana and K-9. Twas the night before Christmas, and all through colony pod D-61-A, not a creature was stirring, not even a... Well, actually, that's not entirely true, as will soon become clear. For a start, it wasn't technically the night before Christmas, although as you'll see, with a little poetic license, we can probably get away with that. Secondly, a few creatures were stirring, even though they had no right to be, within the frigid atmosphere of the spacecraft. However, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. As we've said, Colony Pod D-61-A, otherwise known as the Carsedan, was about to experience a not-so-silent night. A security camera, mounted on an icicle-encrusted wall, whirred and clicked as it tracked a squat, boxy, metallic construct that was unexpectedly gliding across the frost-dusted floor. The machine trundled to the right, halting in front of a bank of similarly frozen controls. The microprocessor behind the camera paused in confusion as it focused its lens on a small rectangle of crimson light projected from a grid at the head of the object. An aerial, tipped with a tiny suction cup, extended from the center of the grid and brushed a plastic dome on the console. Instantly, the room was aglow, and K-9 was bathed in pale cerulean light. Romana stepped out of the TARDIS into the watery blue light of the colony pod's flight deck, bitter cold instantly stinging her cheeks.
"Localized environmental systems reactivated, Master,"
K-9 chirruped from the floor. "Oh, well done, K-9, said a muffled voice. Romana glanced back to see the doctor stepping out of the TARDIS, only his twinkling eyes visible above his scarf, which was wound tight against the cold. He squatted and patted the robot's oblong head. "Good dog."
"Doctor, it's positively freezing in here," Romana sighed, casting her eyes round the frost-covered interior of the Carsedan's flight deck.
"That's all right," the doctor said cheerfully. "You're dressed for it." Hands on hips, Romana appraised her outfit. The accoutrements of a member of the Royal Flying Corps. Knee-length leather jacket, flying hat, goggles, gloves, and a magnificent white silk scarf.
"The current mean temperature is minus 83 degrees centigrade, mistress,"
K-9 reported helpfully.
"Chin up, Romana," said the doctor. "The heating units have been reactivated, haven't they, K-9?
"Affirmative."
"It will soon be as toasty as the ice canyons of Karabathura."
"It'll be shirt sleeves, then." She pursed her lips in thought. "Perhaps I'll go and change." The doctor pulled his scarf down and smiled up at his companion, his teeth reflecting the flickering emergency lights above. Suddenly, the ship lurched, and a booming explosion shattered the stillness.
"What was that?" Romana shouted, clutching an overhead pipe to prevent her from tumbling into a heap on top of K-9.
"Let's find out, shall we?" The doctor, seemingly unaffected by the ship's sudden movement, leapt over K-9, dropped into a padded chair, and began fiddling with the controls.
"First, we deactivate that distress signal." He tapped out a series of numbers on a keypad, and a grid of flickering symbols on the heads-up display went dark.
"Then we open these screens to see what's causing all this ruckus." Deep within the walls of the command dome, pistons hissed and shifted, and above, thick protective plates slowly retracted from the multifaceted windows to unveil the eternal night. Romana's eyes went wide as the forward panels fell away, revealing a vast, white, nebulous mass before them.
"Oh," she said. Doctor, is that what I think it is? The doctor nodded.
Ice cloud. Most likely the result of a mid-space collision between two comets.
Her companion focused the Carcadan scanners on the strange mass, and the readings scrolled across the monitor almost immediately.
Yes, two distinct concentrations of water vapor and debris. Odds of a collision like that occurring in the vastness of deep space are, well...
His voice trailed off in thought. Romana placed her hands on the doctor's shoulders and leaned in from behind the chair. Around 4,000,000 to 1, I'd say.
4,257,000 to 1, to be precise, mistress.
K-9 words smugly, oblivious to the smarty-pants look Romana shot at him. That low, eh? A few more deep booms echoed throughout the flight deck as large chunks of ice and rock smashed into the hull of the Carcadan. Romana leaned forward and examined the readings herself. Do correct me if I'm wrong, Doctor, but isn't our current course leading us straight into the heart of that cloud?
Straight into that cloud?
Straight into that cloud? Do you think I'd be sitting here if we were drifting straight into that cloud? He paused for a second.
Well, unless, of course...
The doctor checked the numbers scrolling across the screen once again, performing a few dozen complex calculations on the fingers of his left hand. He removed his hat and ruffled his hair.
Romana, our current course is leading us straight into the heart of that cloud. That's not very good, is it? We'll probably be smashed to pieces.
Romana sighed, straightened, and folded her leather-clad arms across her chest. Ever since her regeneration, she'd found the doctor's whims and fancies slightly less irritating. However, at times like this, he could test the patience of an Asiren. And just what are we going to do about our imminent destruction? She asked.
Oh, a slight course adjustment to get this ship out of harm's way. Then we slip away unnoticed.
The doctor smirked.
Our modus operandi.
Romana tried to suppress her own smile. There was no point letting him think that she was impressed. He'd be unbearable then.
Oh, very well, she said, plunging her hands into her jacket's pockets. Have you checked on the cryogenic chamber yet?
Romana, I only have one pair of hands, you know. K-9, I have only got one pair of hands, haven't I?
Affirmative, master.
Okay, then, said Romana. Why don't I leave you, your one pair of hands, and K-9, to get more of these systems back online while I pop down and see if our passengers are still tucked up?
Exactly what I was going to suggest, the doctor beamed at her.
With a knowing look, Romana turned on her heels and sashayed out of the control dome, exiting via a round door that irised open and closed behind her with a gaseous hiss. They watched the girl leave. The tall, strange man was muttering something to the equally strange machine that sat obediently at his booted feet. He wasn't supposed to be there. They knew that, of course, and he definitely wasn't supposed to be touching those controls. But, for now, they decided to lurk in the shadows a little longer. After all, they'd always been told never to talk to strangers. In the corridor just outside the flight deck, Romana paused before a large flat panel display, and with a swipe of her fingertips, the screen illuminated, revealing a detailed schematic of the Carcadan.
Cryogenics, please.
A glowing green line sprouted from a helpfully cheerful label that said, "You are here," and wormed its way across the map, terminating with a series of animated concentric circles in the aft section of the ship.
Not too far to go, then, Romana muttered to herself, and switching the diagram off, started on her way.
Of course, by now, after all this adventuring with the doctor, she should have trusted her gut feeling that she was being watched. But the rational side of her brain insisted that there was nothing to fear in the corridor. Suddenly, the rational side of her mind shut itself up when absolutely nothing growled behind her. Slowly, Romana turned to look straight into the eyes of a something. The something looked straight back at her. They were just about to make their move. They'd watched him long enough, sprinting back and forth, flicking switches, punching screens, talking to the robot. The little machine followed him this way and that, as if it were trying to assist. For a time, they had been transfixed by this energetic whirl of activity, mesmerized by this stranger who seemed to positively crackle with energy. It had been so long since there had been any movement in this place. Then, just when they'd summoned up the courage to step forward, a muffled shriek pierced the air. The stranger spun, almost tripping over the obscenely long, colorful stripe of material wound around his neck.
"Romana!"
he shouted, bolting from the room.
before shouting over his shoulder, "Wait here, canine!" They stepped back into the shadows and awaited his return.
"Oh yes, very funny," Romana said as the doctor stood in the doorway guffawing. She was pinned to the floor by a hairy, though clearly affectionate creature. "Now would you mind lifting this beast off me before it licks away my epidermis?"
"Heal!" the doctor barked. The creature turned and, much to Romana's surprise, rushed to the Time Lord's side. He crouched and scratched the animal's head. "Well, aren't you a delight? I haven't seen anything like you for centuries."
The mammal squinted, wagged its long tail, and purred. Romana stood and dusted herself off.
"You recognize it, then?" "Who wouldn't? Romana, you've just been slobbered on by a rather fine specimen of the 40th century's genetically engineered pet of choice. I believe they called them cogs. Half cat, half dog."
"So, they're fiercely loyal, but prone to long naps?" Romana said dryly.
"The perfect mix! This one must have been in self-induced hibernation until K-9 reactivated the environmental systems."
The doctor dug into his deep pockets. "I'm sure I have some kibble in here somewhere."
"Or would it prefer a saucer of milk?"
The cog returned to Romana and rubbed its head affectionately against her leg.
"Looks as though you've made a new chum. Don't let K-9 see you. He'll be terribly upset."
"Delightful," Romana sighed, shaking her head.
"Right! I'm going to go back and save us from icy oblivion. Haven't you checked those cryogenic pods yet?"
He held up his sonic screwdriver and gave it an experimental buzz.
"They won't check themselves, you know."
The stranger had come back, which pleased them no end. They liked him. They watched as he manipulated a small device in his palm, scrolling through layers of computer files on the main flight deck screen. They couldn't be sure, but it looked as if he was scanning all the way back to the launch of the pod some 300 years previously.
"Ah, as I thought," he announced to the squat machine that obediently spun at the sound of his deep, velvety voice. "It looks as though the bulk of the colony swarm was pillaged by space pirates about 7 years after departure from Earth. Think of it, K-9. All those dormant pods moving as one, all under the command of one central navigation node. Oh, they were sitting in that today. Automatic energy protocols were activated and the engines fired, but no one awoke from their icy slumber. The ship must have tumbled light-years off course, the armada scattering amongst the stars. A slight rotation of the palm device, and another data folder peeled open, revealing pages upon pages of mission data.
Aha!
K-9 glided towards the man, pausing beside his master.
Look there. They were bound for Gliese 581D.
My records indicate that at the time of their departure, this planet was more commonly referred to as Earth 2.7,
K-9 announced. They watched as the stranger brought up a familiar three-dimensional animated rendering of an alien world. How many times had they gazed at that very same hologram in wonder and hope? The man seemed to be as impressed as they had once been.
She's a super-Earth.
No wonder all the entries on the log seem so excited. It's all here, K-9. Flight plans checked in triplicate, authorized trajectory, projected arrival at destination, a top-of-the-line planet with all mod cons. They must have thought all their Christmases had come at...
The stranger fell silent, lost in the reports. They watched as he rubbed his open palm thoughtfully across his mouth.
Master?
K-9 prompted.
Oh, it's nothing, K-9. I've just noticed the date they had programmed to arrive. 25th of December, classical calendar. The poor dears. They've overslept on Christmas morning by more than 300 years. That's enough to make a grown Time Lord weep.
After several wrong turns, Romana and the cog finally arrived at the airlock leading into the cryogenic chamber. She attempted to peer through the tiny window into the mysterious hall beyond, but a thick coat of frost obscured her vision. To their right, a small yellow and black notice read, "In case of emergency." Without hesitation, Romana pulled at the indicated control lever. The environmental door before them shot upwards into the ceiling, allowing them access to the chamber beyond. Inside, it was quiet and rather peaceful in the large room. Rows upon rows of sleep capsules radiated away from the doorway like the spokes of a great wheel. Occasionally, a faint hiss of escaping carbon dioxide emitted from the life support systems of the slumbering colonists, breaking the tomb-like stillness within the vast chamber. Slowly, Romana moved among the capsules,
occasionally glancing down through viewports at their sleeping human occupants. She noted how many of the sleepers exhibited subtle smiles, and she sensed their collective hope for a better future, far away from an overpopulated and overpolluted planet Earth. Unfortunately, not all were able to express that sense of hope, for a sparkling atmospheric barrier now sealed off a damaged section of the chamber. On the other side of this shield, Romana saw that an enormous section of wall was now missing, and a field of stars could be observed beyond. Beneath the massive scar, several cryogenic capsules lay damaged or destroyed, buried beneath rubble and ice.
"I wonder how long ago that impact occurred," Romana said aloud.
The cog grumbled and looked up at the Time Lady.
"Fortunately, the ship's emergency systems isolated the damage, and obviously you were spared."
Romana stopped. "The doctor theorized that you were hibernating, but surely if that were true, shouldn't you be ravenous?" She bent down and ran her hand along the cog's muscular body.
"Your coat is thick and healthy, and I'd go so far as to say that you're a tad overweight. But how is that possible unless..."
Romana's voice trailed off as she noticed the two cryo capsules nearest to them. The seals were broken, and the beds inside devoid of their occupants. She looked from the vacant capsules to the cog. The creature squinted, growled, and leaned back, poised to attack. The machine the stranger called K-9 had trundled away on some errand for his master, and they decided it was time to make their move. The stranger was alone now. They could hear the device he'd been using on the underside of the control console, its low whirring buzz almost disguised by his own off-tune whistling. The tune brought back memories of the family huddled around the holovision, interacting with repeats of old comedies and exchanging presents beneath the recyclable synthetree. It was something about shepherds washing their socks by night. The tune stopped at the sound of the melting ice crunching beneath their feet. They halted.
"K-9?" the stranger called out. "Back already? Surely that retro array takes longer to align than..."
He swung himself out of the access panel, but it was too late. They were right on top of him. His face registered surprise before splitting into a dazzling smile.
"Hello there."
Romana pounded down the corridor, running from dark to light and repeating pattern beneath the line of emergency lights studding the ceiling. Frantically, she glanced behind before throwing her scarf back over her shoulder, looking forward and redoubling her efforts. Coming up fast behind her was the cog, claws skittering on the metal floor plates as it ran after her, saliva-glistening teeth bared and growling menacingly.
"I'm the doctor, and who might you be?"
The girl cocked her head to one side and spoke first.
"My name is Alpharetta."
Her voice was delicate and cultured.
"I'm 7.
The doctor was suitably impressed.
"Are you now?"
"I'm Bertram," said the boy, stepping into the doctor's line of sight.
"And I'm 8, he declared proudly.
Alpharetta looked over at Bertram and stuck her tongue out, pulling the teddy bear she clutched in her small hands to her chest. They were both dressed in identical pajamas and dressing gowns.
"Well, I am delighted to meet you both."
The doctor crouched before the two children and withdrew a small crumpled paper bag from his pocket. He pulled it open and offered its contents to the children.
"Would you care for a jelly?"
At that moment, the main door pivoted open and K-9 trundled in, nose blaster extended and primed.
"Down, K-9! Down, boy! You don't want to shoot Alpharetta and Bertram, do you?"
Bertram approached.
"Is it a cog, doctor?" he asked, reaching out to touch the machine.
Alpharetta moved in step with Bertram.
"Or is it just a plain old dog?" she wondered.
"He's neither here nor there, actually. He's a robot, and he's my best friend, aren't you, K-9?
"Affirmative, master."
K-9 wagged his tail antenna and rotated his head-mounted tracking sensors as Bertram ran his tiny fingers over the multicolored keypad located in the small of the robot's steel-gray back. He smiled delightedly.
"Can he do any tricks?" Bertram asked.
K-9 spoke for himself.
"I can conduct extensive repairs to any spacecraft in the known galaxies, or pilot the TARDIS unaided through the time vortex."
Alpharetta looked deep into K-9's visual sensors.
"But can you fetch a ball?"
She looked back at the doctor with wide, ice-blue eyes. "Can he sit up and beg?"
"Oh, I suppose you could, couldn't you, K-9?
The doctor asked.
"I see no practical value in these behaviors, master,"
K-9 stated. Suddenly, the door twisted open once again, and Romana rushed through, breathless.
"Doctor, it's after me," she cried.
After you? What's after you?
The doctor looked up the corridor. The cog was charging towards them, its wide eyes and slavering jaws visible as it passed through each beam of emergency lighting projected from above.
K-9! Rearm that stun beam of yours, he shouted. And don't fire till you see the yellow of its eyes!
Suddenly, Romana was standing between K-9 and the oncoming cog.
No, wait, K-9! Hold your fire! She suddenly ordered.
The doctor looked from Romana to the door and back again.
Well, make your mind up!
Mistress!
Questioned K-9. Romana turned as the gap quickly closed between her and the creature, but the cog lowered its head and rushed straight past the Time Lady into the control room. The doctor jumped backwards as a flash of gray streaked beneath his booted feet, and jumped again as the cog pounced forward. There was a terminal squeak as the cog brought its claws down onto a small, fuzzy rodent.
Not even a mouse, the doctor mused to himself.
I spied it zigzagging along the corridor in front of the cog just as K-9 was preparing his blaster. Bertram and Alpharetta ran forward with delighted grins lighting up their faces, pointing into the corner.
Look!
They squealed excitedly.
And there goes another, observed the doctor.
They all watched as the little creature squeezed itself through a tiny gap in an access panel and vanished. The doctor kneeled and yanked the panel from its frame. His eyes went wide as a swarm of mice spilled out onto the floor, then scattered in all directions.
We've got ourselves an infestation!
The cog, spying the flurry of tiny creatures, turned away from its catch and pursued some more of the animals back down the corridor from where it had originally come.
Well, that certainly explains why so many of the ship's systems are unresponsive.
And how our four-legged friend has managed to survive and thrive on his own, Romana concluded.
I was wondering what happened to my pet mice, said Bertram.
Romana slowly turned, noticing the two children for the first time. She sighed.
And you are?
The doctor cleared his throat.
Alpharetta? Bertram? Allow me to introduce Romana de Veratra Lundar.
Alpharetta approached the Time Lady and extended her hand. Her round little face was creased in thought.
Your name is very cumbersome. May I call you Fred instead? She asked.
It's Romana, if you'd please. They shook hands.
Well, I prefer Fred, Bertram commented.
The doctor laughed.
My thoughts exactly!
So what are the three of you doing in our spaceship?
Asked Alpharetta. The doctor thought for a moment, and then snapped his fingers.
Intergalactic Rescue!
He fished a business card from his pocket and flashed it in the children's direction.
We're here to fix your pod.
Intergalactic Rescue? I don't believe you, said Bertram.
Romana stepped up. We intercepted your distress beacon, bypassed our randomizer, and reset the coordinates to materialize. She rapped on the side of the TARDIS and then continued, right here. Alpharetta examined the police box.
Then this is your spaceship?
Yes, said the doctor.
But it's made of wood.
Actually, the shell is nothing more than a physical manifestation of an elaborate mathematical algorithm, Romana replied. Bertram screwed up his face.
It's a magic box, then.
If you like, said Romana. The doctor tweaked Bertram's nose.
And what about the two of you? What are you doing up and about?
A few days ago, I dreamt of an explosion, Bertram said. It was brilliant. And then we woke up, Alpharetta added.
Romana filled in the gaps for the doctor, explaining the massive hull damage in the cryogenic chamber. Suddenly the ship lurched, and a shower of sparks rained down from above, startling the children.
Doctor, this ship barely survived one massive impact. I doubt it could handle another one of similar magnitude.
The doctor activated his sonic screwdriver and unlocked a small wall-mounted box beneath which sat a large button.
I believe the appropriate phrase is red alert.
He pressed the button, and all hell broke loose. Alpharetta and Bertram settled down onto a nearby settee and watched as the doctor and Romana sprang into action, strapping themselves into chairs designated for the pilot and co-pilot.
K-9, access the Carsedan system profile. I need to know the extent of the damage caused by those rodents.
K-9 extended his datacom probe and quickly synced with the pod's internal network.
Main engines are offline, Romana shouted.
The doctor checked the readings.
Yes, I know, but what about the parallel systems?
They're out too.
Analysis complete,
announced K-9, withdrawing his sensor from the access point.
The Rodentia have damaged several power generation apparatus beyond repair.
K-9's right.
Romana double-checked her findings. We simply don't have enough time to restore the energy converters, Doctor. She withdrew her hands from the controls, defeated. The Carsedan is finished. Behind, Bertram sat quietly playing with a hologame console. Suddenly, the ghostly display dimmed and flickered out. He smacked the side of the device. Rats! I forgot to change the batteries! He tossed the game console across the room in frustration. Before it met the floor, the doctor intercepted it in midair.
Be ashamed to damage it, he said. I have an HG-18 in the TARDIS, with the optional emotional feedback package.
18? Bertram wondered. But that's the HG-2. The HG-3 was about to come out just before we left Earth. Oh, I so wanted one for Christmas.
Did I fail to mention that we're time travelers?
Another violent impact shook the ship. Doctor, I think it's high time you were telling us all your incredibly clever plan for saving our lives, Romana pleaded. The doctor spun in his chair and held up the gaming device, shaking it in his palm.
Romana, have you ever played Gamma Authority 3?
Romana arched her eyebrows in disbelief. I can't say that I have, Doctor. This is hardly the right time for...
It's a very good game, isn't it, Bertram?
Oh yes, my second favorite, Bertram replied.
On the 16th level, the Aglakian Marauders bombard your shaft fighter with Garber radiation.
Garber radiation? Romana asked. Surely there's no such thing.
Oh, no imagination, said the doctor, shaking his head slightly. You're right, of course, Romana. The fictional radiation is named after the game's lead programmer. Regardless, the only way to save your ship and advance to the next level is...
Bertram and Alpharetta were now flanking the doctor and Romana. You have to reconfigure your engines and use the radiation for fuel, said the boy.
Precisely!
The doctor punched a button on the console, and a glittering panel materialized before Romana that read, Emergency Ram Scoop Activation. The Car Sedan is equipped with ram scoops, Romana stated, surprised.
Yes, plenty of exploitable volatile matter floating about out there amongst all that hydrogen-rich ice and debris.
Alpharetta moved away, opened a small hatch, and withdrew a data pad. She walked back and offered it to the doctor. Will this help? She asked. The doctor read the plastic slipcase.
Colony Pod Interactive Operator's Manual.
He tossed the device over his shoulder, where it landed with a loud clatter.
No need for that, he turned to his companion. Romana!
She pressed the large red start button. Outside, two enormous panels to either side of the Carsidan's control dome slid back, revealing umbrella-like arrays, which sprouted from the ports like glowing poinsettia bracts. Almost immediately, the arrays began drawing in the space debris and ice. Back inside, once darkened panels and control systems illuminated with the sudden influx of energy being fed directly into the appropriate zones, the ship was returning to life.
Smell that? The doctor sniffed. Fission converters. Impressive for this century.
He monitored the buildup in the engines, and once the status lights shifted from red to green, he activated the thrusters, quickly shifting the ship away from the ice cloud and out of harm's way.
Are we going to die, Doctor? Bertram asked.
Of course not. You are a morbid little boy, aren't you?
The doctor reprogrammed the original destination into the navigation system.
Well, I'll be, he said with a laugh.
Is there a problem? Romana asked.
Not at all.
The doctor resealed the overhead blast shields, which grumbled back into position until they met with an echoing thump.
I've reset the Carsidan's original course, and according to the chronometer, she'll enter the orbit of Gliese 581D on 25th of December.
He smiled at the children.
We won't have missed Christmas after all,
Alpharetta announced, leaping for joy. The doctor stood and squashed his hat onto his head, pushing it down firmly and grinning.
Shall we?
Leaving so soon? Romana asked.
No, not just yet.
He moved towards the TARDIS.
K-9, any idea where I put the tinsel?
The doctor stepped down off a cargo container, having just placed a star atop the lush Atraquian Forevergreen. He wiped his hands on his scarf, and then stepped back to admire his handiwork.
Oh, it looks magnificent!
Alpharetta and Bertram said in unison. The cog, looking well-fed, entered the room and sat near the doctor.
What a good boy you are!
The Time Lord reached out and scratched the beast behind its ears.
Master?
K-9 approached, then stopped and slowly lowered his head.
Oh, you're not jealous, are you, K-9?
The robotic dog remained silent.
Good grief, you are!
K-9 rotated away from the doctor ever so slightly.
K-9, you are my best friend, and you must never forget that. Understood?
The robot spun around, raised his head, and approached.
Affirmative, Master.
Now it's time you two were back in bed. Bertram and Alpharetta grumbled their disappointment. Not another word. Romana stretched her arm out in the direction of the exit. Bed, she said firmly, but smiling all the same. The two children groaned reluctantly and began shuffling across the bay. In the cryo chamber, the doctor and Romana helped Bertram and Alpharetta back into their capsules.
Will you be here when we wake? Asked Bertram.
Oh, I shouldn't think so. When you next open your eyes, we'll be long gone.
Well, it's been very nice meeting you both, said Alpharetta, yawning slightly.
Romana brought the blankets up under Alpharetta's chin and grinned at the young girl.
It's been nice meeting you as well. And just think, your parents will be awake next time you're up and about. Just don't wake them too early on Christmas morning.
Alpharetta considered this sagely.
Yes, I think I've missed Mummy very much.
And so you should, said the doctor. Oh, I almost forgot.
The doctor reached into his coat, withdrew a small silver handheld device, and handed it to the young boy.
Merry Christmas!
The HG-18? Wow!
Bertram took it in his hands.
By the time you reach your new home, there'll be all the rage back on old Earth. Plus, I made a few modifications to this one. It'll never need a recharge.
Thank you, Doctor!
The doctor tucked Bertram in and ruffled his hair, just as Romana handed Alpharetta a brand new teddy bear with a white silk bow wrapped around his neck. She snuggled into the bear as Romana stepped back, resealed the little girl's capsule, and activated the freezing process. The doctor did the same to Bertram's capsule. He smiled.
Good night, children. Sleep well.
The doctor and Romana watched as the little boy and girl gave into the influence of the stasis field, slowly shutting their tired eyes and slipping off into a deep slumber. The two companions turned and stepped from the darkened, silent cryogenic chamber. The cog sat obediently by the children's pods, head cocked to one side as it watched the door. Seconds later, the doctor and Romana tiptoed back into the chamber, both heavily laden with brightly gift-wrapped boxes and packages. They went through the chamber, leaving a couple of parcels at the foot of each pod. Their work complete, the doctor beckoned to the cog, and they moved towards the door. The doctor turned before he left and grinned widely.
Merry Christmas, my dears, he whispered.
The doctor and Romana returned to the flight deck, the cog bounding into the room ahead of them.
I still don't quite understand how the cog managed to survive for all this time on its own. Is our furry friend here really over 300 years old?
Romana wondered.
Oh, I suspect he's been augmented with perpetuity glands. Probably several more healthy centuries ahead of him.
The doctor patted the creature's head. The cog suddenly caught sight of a passing rodent, meow-barked, and rushed off in quick pursuit.
Provided he's well-fed and gets plenty of exercise, the doctor laughed, and then called out to his mechanical friend. Come along, K-9! Time we were going.
K-9 finished rerouting power to the tree, and the glitter-encrusted star and matching strings of fairy lights illuminated, casting an undulating yellowish glow around the flight deck. He withdrew his probe, and then followed the doctor and Romana into the police box. The doctor's voice echoed back into the flight deck.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
With a rush of interdimensional wind, the TARDIS dematerialized from the realm of the physical, leaving behind a quiet spacecraft with a bright future. And from a tiny grill mounted in the central control panel at the front of the command dome, there emitted a faint ringing tone buried in a sea of static, the distant yet unmistakable carrier signal of another Earth colony pod, carrying yet more children, all snug in their beds.